I'm Simon Blake, and this is Just About Coping. Our second guest in this series is Nat Kilsby. Nat identifies as gender fluid. In this episode, they describe what being gender fluid means, the relationship between their mental health and their gender identity. We also talk about the importance of getting pronouns right and why Nat uses they, them, and theirs. It was a real pleasure speaking to Nat, and I think they expressed really, really clearly why it's so important that you can take your whole self to work and why it's good for individuals, good for business, and makes a real difference to performance, to satisfaction, and to leadership. I hope you enjoy this episode. So Nat, thank you very much for welcoming us to your offices at Goldman Sachs. Could you just start off by telling us five words or phrases which describe you?
Oh, five words. Without overthinking them, I'm a dad, very important to me. Loving, change, magic, and drive.
Got to start with asking a bit about magic.
So magic, I think life needs to be a little bit about magic sometimes. And certainly my life is crazy in some regards, but magic in others. But there was a real magic link in that for the past sort of 10 to 15 years, it's something I've done as a part-time hobby. During one period of gardening leave between two jobs, I decided I wanted to teach myself magic. I found a really good mentor. He's a great card magician. And so began a passion, which is something I like to do at parties and sometimes weave into my corporate life as well.
Wow. That wasn't the answer that I was expecting. So my mum told us that people make the magic. So it's always an interesting one when people actually do magic. Could you tell us a little bit about your work as well here? Just because I think it's interesting that somebody who's a scientific is also into magic.
Sure. So my job here at Goldman, my background professionally has always been as a software engineer. And over my experience, really gravitated towards electronic trading and systematic trading. That's what I've done for most of my career. But more recently, I've started to apply those same techniques into the middle and back office of firms like Goldman and others, where there's a lot of manual work that's happening. And you can apply similar techniques in systematic trading to the way that we book trades and run our middle office.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, yeah, the magic and the day job, definitely interesting bed partners. Could you just talk to us a little bit about your gender identity?
We've
been privileged to have you speak at House of Lords event and where you talked openly about your gender identity. So just tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So I identify as gender fluid, which means that on a given day, I decide to present male or female. And it's been, you know, a journey to arrive at this place. You know, when I was young, age of 8, probably through to my late teens, it was something that I used to think about and was confusing. You know, having these feelings about a draw to the other gender and not being able to explain why. And it wasn't something I told anyone back then. It was a different time and place back then. Transgender wasn't really something that was talked about, wasn't really known, and something I kept within myself. I did tell some people when I got into my late teens. It wasn't the most positive experience. Mm. Again, different time and place. And therefore, it was something that I consciously, and now in reflection, unconsciously buried for the next 20, 25 years. Mm. And it was 3 years ago when these feelings returned. And I went through a period where I reflected that emotionally I was very grey, disconnected, very good at my job, and had some crazy hobbies. I was always busy, couldn't relax, always doing something, but something was missing. And so I went to get some help at the recommendation of some friends just to actually understand why don't I feel things anymore. Mm. And it was into that process and my first time in psychotherapy when I started to remember these feelings, remember the memories, but also remember the feelings. And two things happened. I had a return of emotion, which was quite powerful and positive, but also a return of a very deep longing for a female life that I couldn't explain. And very overpowering. The way I describe it when I talk now is, it's like a spring. If you have it coiled and compressed for 25 years and you let go, it's going to be pretty much out of control for a little while. And that's what it was like in the early days. Gender dysphoria can be very overpowering and very consuming. But over the three and a half years, I've done a lot of work on myself in various ways to really understand those feelings. and really come to a realization that they are feelings. Feelings are not right or wrong. They are just feelings. Mm. And you need to learn to live within them. And what that means for me is, you know, I have these feelings I can't control and I like to express them in certain ways. And so I've learned to be able to express female in the world, to be able to live a female life when I want to, build a social network around me that accommodates that, but also practically make that work in terms of all the other facets of my life, many of which bring me joy alongside. And so really arrive now in a place where I feel really comfortable that I've created an identity that is complex, but works for me. And it works for me in a way that it allows me to live the life I want to lead and feel very fulfilled with that.
And you described it as complex just a moment ago. And I think the bit which you said in there is feelings are not right or wrong. They just are feelings. You've also, I've heard you describe it as being a living experiment. Could you just say a bit about that sort of sense of your gender as a and feelings about your gender as an experiment?
Sure.
I was really struck by it when you said it before.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things I reflect on because as far as work goes, and you know, a lot of my life in general, I'm a scientist. You know, I'm logical. I like to plan things. I don't like things that are too risky. I like to understand what I'm going into. But when it comes to feelings and emotion, you can't do that. And I remember when I went into psychotherapy the first time, my initial ask of my psychotherapist was, you have 10 weeks, please fix me. And she explained, it doesn't really work that way. You can't treat it like a project. Feelings, you have to feel, you have to experience. And I've learned to realize that I have to immerse myself in my feelings. I have to try things to see how they feel. I then react to those and decide what I will do with them. You do have a choice of what you do with your feelings and how you act upon them. But to get there, it very much is an experiment. And I feel like I've been doing an emotional experiment for the last few years. Mm. It, of course, involves others around me as well. I'm trying to navigate that landscape so that everyone comes along the journey with me.
Yeah.
But I do feel that by doing that experimentation and by being in an environment, both with my friends, family, and with work, being able to experiment is the only way that I could arrive at a place where I feel comfortable because I've been able to actually experience things, gather data, and figure out what works for me.
And that's a really interesting point, isn't it, about you just described your friends, your family, and your workplace. And of course, part of this My Whole Self campaign is about how do we bring our whole selves into work? And do you feel, I guess, that you are, as you're navigating, that you're taking your whole self into those different areas? And if you, could you talk to us a little bit about taking your whole self to work with this identity, which you've described as complex?
Taking your whole self to work, I reflect, it's taking yourself in whatever you are at the time. Mm. You know, when you're on an emotional journey, and I like to compare my journey to emotional journeys more broadly, rather than, you know, box it into a gender identity journey. And I've found as I've been experimenting is my reality changes. You know, when the feelings first came back, I didn't know how to deal with them. At some points I was convinced on transition and that changed. And what I have been able to do, though, in the workplace, to your question, is be able to, over time, become comfortable that even though I may not exactly know who I am, because I'm on a journey to figure that out, that I can bring that uncertainty, I can bring that emotional state into the workplace, be comfortable in experimenting with who I want to be. You know, it's a fact that I spend most of my time at work.
Yeah.
And so it's important to me that I can experiment with my emotional self in the workplace and feel comfortable, feel accepted, feel that it's okay to be on that experiment. And also, you know, feel that it's okay to not be okay sometimes. You know, I've been successful at Goldman so far and I'm enjoying it here. But there's certainly been days when the biggest thing in my mind has been my personal journey. And being in a state where people can, around you can be comfortable with that, I think is super important.
Being on that personal journey, and being able to recognize that that goes hand in hand with the workplace, how does that impact on your performance, your ability to innovate, your relationships with people at work?
I find them transformational now that I've arrived in this place of fulfillment. The beginning of 2019, I took the decision based off, you know, the feelings at the time, this wasn't a journey I wanted to follow anymore. And I would present mail, I would stop this side of myself expressing myself female. And when I took that decision, which is multifaceted, it involves my family, my children, my work. At the time, in that moment, it felt the right one. I had a huge sense of relief. I don't need to spend an hour getting ready anymore in the morning. I don't need to worry about being different, which was on my mind. Mm. So I had this wave of relief. But then over the months that followed, I noticed two things. First off, my emotions, my passion started to dwindle again, and I liken it to turning gray from being colorful before. Mm-hmm. And secondly, my stress levels went through the roof. And I convinced myself for a while that I was just stressed and nothing related to this journey. When I actually got some help for the stress, which, you know, Goldman were very helpful with as well, and I think that's an important part of workplace support, I was able to then re-engage with these feelings that are feelings that don't go away. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge them, don't be scared of them. And when I re-engaged with them and accepted that this is part of me, my emotions returned and my stress levels went back to zero again. Mm-hmm. And I do find that my ability to network, my ability to interact with people, my ability to dream, my ability to sort of think big, mm-hmm. some of the things I'm doing here work-wise are quite grand and quite bold. Mm-hmm. They all get supercharged because there's something inside me which I'm feeding off. It's an energy that's part of my identity. And when it's not suppressed, it helps me with lots of other things.
And in that month when you were, you know, feeling grey, feeling super stressed, would your work colleagues have noticed and understood that?
I'm sure they would have done. I mean, we've recently launched here at Goldman a mental health first aider mm-hmm. program, mm-hmm. which is specifically targeted at things like that. But, you know, I didn't have any comments from colleagues at work, mm-hmm. but I did reach out to my boss, who was very helpful. I reached out to our support networks, who were then able to put me in touch with the right support to then guide me back to realizing that these feelings are something I need to connect with.
Yeah. And if you were also to think about different facets of your identity, how does that interplay with different ways that you do things at work? You talked about, you know, sometimes about presenting as male, mm-hmm. sometimes presenting as female, both how you present or think in your work or how people relate to you. Is there any sort of insight and understanding?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think certainly in the initial part of my journey when I was experimenting and, you know, first started presenting female at work, I was very conscious of gender bias and unconscious bias. And, you know, there were some things that I observed, but, you know, if I'm presenting female, do I feel like I can be as, you know, heard in the same way? Do I, you know, am I reacted to differently? And I couldn't put my finger on whether it's just my perception or whether it's unconscious bias from other people. But it was nevertheless a fascinating journey to sort of be in a position where some days I can present male, sometimes I can present female. I think these days, now I've unified an identity into, you know, an identity that is mine, I actually don't feel different mm-hmm. depending on how I present. I just maybe feel different about myself. You know, I'm proud of how I look and how I behave and how I can interact with the world, regardless of which gender I'm presenting in.
Yeah.
And that's important to me. So I do feel these days that just the journey I'm on, the ability to have freedom to express myself in the way I want to, just gives me a lot more confidence and makes me happy.
And how does that happiness translate into performance? How does that happiness translate into innovation? You know, you've talked about moments where you suppressed feelings and it impacted on work negatively. And I think that we're all perhaps a bit more familiar with how things impact negatively, perhaps less able to talk about how it impacts positively. And given that I'm sat with a scientist who likes crunchy terms, is there any sort of sense from your journey that you can...
I mean, in my mind, there is a real commercial value in encouraging people to be their true selves at work and bring their whole selves to work. I find my mental blocks removed. I find any blocks in terms of innovation removed. My ideas are flowing more freely. I have more energy. It's like having an energy source that I can tap into. You know, my mojo just goes through the roof. Whereas before it might be contained, I just feel like there now are no boundaries. And I have a saying that I joke about with the team that, you know, when we have hard things to do, I'll say to them, well, you know, if I can do this, we can do anything.
Yeah.
Right. And it becomes a little bit of a mantra to myself that if I can be who I want to be, even if it's nonconformist, even if it's unusual compared to the norm,
mm-hmm.
right, then you can do anything and the work problems become easier.
Yeah.
And so it really gives me a fire that I draw on. It's infectious. It rubs off on my team. We have a very energized team. And just a level of transparency. I mean, transparent, inclusive leadership, when you are your whole self, comes naturally. Yeah. And that also pervades into the team. A very loyal and open team who get behind your vision because they see truth and transparency.
Yeah. Which is incredibly powerful. And I was going to say, so it sounds like there are two bits. One is your own energy, but also your power and ability to energize your team. Goldman Sachs, as a employer, has obviously embraced this journey with you. Can you just talk about how that has happened?
I'm in a lucky position that I'm a senior hire here, senior MD. And what Goldman have been great at and amazing at is just providing as much support as possible, but also following my lead in terms of what I asked for.
Mm-hmm.
They've not had anyone like myself who wanted to sort of blur the gender boundary. And so everything I've asked for, they've just put resources and help behind making happen. So some examples, you know, when I first joined, I had the unusual challenge of, well, I have one security badge and it's printed in my mail. I chose Nat as a dual gender name.
Mm-hmm.
I have one photo. And so, you know, we talked about options and ideas, but very quickly was able to give me a dual-sided pass, which mm-hmm. they had to jump through hoops and get security clearance and be nimble about trying to create, but we made happen.
Mm.
And Pronouns Initiative is another example that, you know, has been driven centrally, but I've been part of and been able to help with. So lots of support, lots of direct support from peers and from my team. You know, I just found it a very supportive environment.
Mm.
I think, you know, diversity is very important to Goldman, but it's nice to see it being done practically in my situation and just getting the support I needed.
Yeah. And it sounds like two things there. One is where there's a will, there's a way. You know, security passes may not be the first thing that people thought about, but actually present a very real issue. And there is a solution if people want to find solutions. But the other that's really striking in that is it's not a let's just ignore it. It's an active conversation that you're having.
I think also I've just found it a very supportive place. I think back to our earlier discussion, terms of being able to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I've not felt any pressure either way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's of the times when I've stepped back, of the times when I've plowed ahead in terms of how what I want to do with this journey,
mm-hmm.
I've found that those around me, my peers, people I work for, will accommodate either way.
Yeah,
I think that's what's needed.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't feel any pressure. I don't feel any pressure to be a trailblazer or an example. I just fit in and follow my lead, which I think is very important when you're on an emotional journey.
Absolutely. So if you were to give some advice for other businesses, for people you're working in people departments or senior managers that might be listening to this and trying to think, actually, then what should we be doing? If you had sort of some hot tips from your experience about things that have really been of benefit, what would they be?
Well, I think my biggest advice with the gender journey is that, you know, transgender and gender expression is a spectrum, right? And I find it helpful, and I do talk to other people and encourage other people to view this journey as just another journey of human emotion, human expression, and a journey to fulfillment. And I think if you can normalize a journey, perhaps away from the polar debate that sometimes happens, it becomes easier to understand and support people on a journey to just be themselves. And obviously that's wider than just gender.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that I campaign for and am involved for in Goldman now, and we're doing a lot to try and push forward, is just to encourage, you know, inclusive, transparent leadership as well. I think the more our leaders can humanize themselves, tell their own human stories,
mm-hmm.
then a human story like mine that's about gender or a human story of somebody else going through something becomes easier to share, easier to talk about, and easier to support.
Yeah.
So I think the more we can do to humanize our leadership will encourage the workplace to feel like they can start that step of being themselves, because quite often it's that first step that can be so hard when there's some sense that everyone needs to wear a mask at work.
It's a really interesting phrase, isn't it? We talk a lot about authentic leadership, and what you've just described is humanizing leadership. Can you just talk to us a bit more about what that means?
I just find it very powerful when another feedback I get when I talk, but also when I've heard other inspiring leaders talk, when they can share something of themselves, right? That you know, especially our senior leaders who are in positions of great success, they've done very well in their career, to be able to hear that they may have been through a difficult divorce, or they've been through a difficult mental health journey a few years back, or they're experimenting with something like their gender, whatever it might be, suddenly the barriers between your most junior employee and your most senior employee are gone.
Yeah.
Because we're all human.
Yeah.
And we're all equal. And that's where true equality comes into play. Yeah. It doesn't matter about your skin color, your gender, and your sexuality. We're all human on a human journey. We're all dealing with living within our feelings, and we're all experiencing emotions in our own way. And, you know, we don't want workplaces to become an emotional overload overnight, but being able to talk about yourself in the true sense and whole sense breaks barriers and just promotes communication. And when people can be honest and open about themselves, I truly feel they'll get access to the same energy that I can draw from.
It's interesting, isn't it? You just use the phrase emotional overload. And actually, one of the things which people have talked about in relation to my whole self is, what about the bits of people's self that we don't want in the workplace, whether that's inappropriate ways of expressing concern or anger? I know that you've been very successful in your career. What does it mean to be able to manage that professional boundary and be yourself?
I think the word professionalism is the key word there. When you're in the workplace, there's a certain amount of professionalism that's common sense that you should adhere to. But where I come from is just breaking down some of the barriers that if you're a senior leader, or regardless actually, that you're somehow immutable, you're somehow impenetrable, you somehow have to be the rock. Right? It's actually quite powerful to show some vulnerability.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, showing some vulnerability, showing that you're human in the right amount breaks down those barriers and improves communication, improves leadership.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really stray into those negative sides of emotional expression that, of course, we don't want in the workplace.
You talked a bit about the pronouns project, and, you know, pronouns are really important. Can you talk to us a bit about the pronouns, but also a bit about your own use of pronouns?
Of course. And this is one thing I do like to talk about and explain, because I do find it's easy to understand when there's a bit of practicality around why. And for me, so, you know, I'm in a situation where I have feelings, I have a longing for a female life that I manage and live a life that is the intersection between my emotional longings and my practical life. And so I oscillate my gender presentation. What that means is that typically I ask my colleagues at work to use the pronouns that reflect how I'm presenting. So it's he, him, his if I'm presenting male, she, her, hers if I'm presenting female. But where that becomes more complicated is if you're having a phone call with me from New York, or if you're referring to me on email. And the reason why pronouns are important to me is that the feelings that I live within can be complex. And if I'm presenting female and someone on the phone is calling me sir and using male pronouns, they're doing nothing wrong because they don't know. But the reality is it can make me feel bad about myself. And it can trigger feelings that can be difficult to manage. And therefore, I ask that to make things easy, use they, them, theirs. As my friends have pointed out, sometimes it's not grammatically correct, right? But that doesn't matter, right? I'm asking you to do that, to make my feelings easier. And my view on life is anything that makes things easier for people and being nice to people, we should do.
Absolutely.
And when I explain that rationale and why, you know, perhaps electronic communication means that gender-neutral pronouns can be important, something clicks in people. It's like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I understand why.
I read somewhere recently that they, their, and them may well be grammatically correct and was used as for single. And obviously, I'm not brilliant enough at English to really understand some of the history, but there are people saying it is grammatically correct. But much more importantly, the point that you're making is it makes you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had exactly the same conversation with somebody recently who wasn't getting it. I was like, does it take any effort from you to try and think about making somebody else feel more comfortable? And that's often the moment where people will try harder, isn't it, to engage that's at the it. Emotional
if
level.
If you can relate it to someone else's feelings, and that by making a small change, you can make them feel better, then it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And that, you know, in the spirit of my whole self, is actually all about creating the workplace culture where people feel included, feel validated, feel respected, and exactly what we're aiming to do. Have you had any personal experience of people underestimating the value and importance of getting pronouns right?
It's an educational journey, I think, because it's a lot. I mean, most people, this might be the first time they've had to even come across the notion of pronouns and why it's important. Mm-hmm. You know, when I politely just correct people at work if they're using the wrong pronouns, or, you know, say things like, you know, hello, sir, or whatever it might be, and just explain why. And it's just, I can see the sort of light bulb sort of understanding, and it's just a slow change in understanding. So I've not had any real personal experience of in the workplace. I've got friends in the trans community who, you know, will share with me that, you know, when they are deliberately misgendered or deliberately use the wrong pronouns, that can be quite painful for people.
Yeah.
Going back to, you know, transgender as a spectrum, when people suffer from gender dysphoria, which could be, like I said, super overpowering, especially in the early stages, it takes a great deal of courage to actually step out to the world and try and express yourself in the way. And the simplest things can knock that. And so for someone early in their journey who might be trying to express themselves to see if how they can live within their feelings, then it might be misgendered. That might be all it takes to then put a quash to the whole journey.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important to sort of realize that it can be very important to people.
And if you to, yeah, it's a really important link, I think, back. You started by saying that you suppressed feelings, you know, when you were much younger. And you've also talked a lot about your journey, a lot about the experience of the feelings and living within those feelings. If you could go back to the 8-year-olds or to the older teen and just talk to them a bit about gender identity, mental health, what would you want to say to them now?
Bits of advice I would give myself. You know, first off is that feelings are not right or wrong. They just exist. Mm-hmm. They can change over time, and how you feel at any point in your life may change, but there's very little you can do to change the way you feel.
Yeah.
Right. So I spent a long time growing up when these feelings were here thinking they were wrong. Right. But the reality is there is no right and wrong with the way you feel. Mm-hmm. You can choose what you do with them. And that's where you have to make some decisions around what does that mean for you? What does it mean for other people?
Yeah.
But stop beating myself up. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think also be kind to yourself. You know, I think self-care, looking yourself in the mirror and telling yourself I'm enough right at this present moment, regardless of where you are, is very important.
Yeah.
And it's an important part of any emotional journey. Any emotional journey will have highs and lows until you arrive at a point of equilibrium. Mm. And especially in the lows, it's important to be kind to yourself, love yourself, and don't beat yourself up.
And of course, that's the time when it is the hardest to do that, and really drawing on your resources. And there will be some people, I'm sure, who are listening to this who are thinking, that's exactly the moment that I can't do that. Is there anything from your experience about when you do have to dig deep that you can sort of reflect on, offers wisdom?
Well, I think, first of all, don't be scared of getting support. You know, I still reflect that getting psychotherapy, getting help, still feels like there's a bit of a stigma here in the UK. First, I speak to my friends in the US, it's like, what, you don't have a therapist? It's like, you know, very different. So, you know, therapy is it's a difficult journey. And I wouldn't say it's easy. You open Pandora's box and you start to address things that make you the way you are. But don't be scared of getting help. There's all kinds of help. You know, I've been privileged enough to get different types, whether it's, you know, more traditional and different flavors of psychotherapy, but also transactional help for those moments when you are going through the lows in that cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, there are techniques you can use. And it's sometimes fascinating to understand that the brain is a predictable thing. Mm-hmm. So even though your emotions are less scientific, understanding how the brain works and how it responds to fear and how it behaves in certain situations can be transformational in navigating those periods, because you can realize what it's doing.
Yeah.
Right. And I find that very helpful as well. There's been transformation not just in dealing with the lows of this emotional journey, but also understanding myself in the business context, understanding, you know, I used to get terrible imposter syndrome, which a lot of leaders do get, but I understand it now and I understand how to actually diffuse that, which is also very powerful.
Wow. If you know how to, can't let that one go. If you know how to diffuse imposter syndrome, given that so many people will sit with that powerful, you know, parrot on the shoulder, whatever it is, are there any ways that you could just share?
Well, the one for me, and it won't resonate with everyone, and this may sound funny, but when I was working through my imposter syndrome, because I would also have days with my gender journey where you'd arrive at that day where you just think that your journey and your ability to navigate through it was in the doom and gloom places. Like, oh, how can I do this? How can I get past this? What am I doing? Why have I made these decisions? You know, and those can mount. Same with imposter syndrome, when you might come into the office and think, I'm faking it. How am I going to get past this? Why am I in a position of leadership? For me, I visualize those feelings as this scary wall behind me. And in the scary wall, there's zombies and eyes and teeth and hands, and it's chasing to catch me, right? And I'm scared of it catching me. But I did some imagery in my mind to turn and face the wall. And once I turn and face the wall, A, it was never moving in the first place, and B, it's just full of like colors and party food and crayons and cakes. It was never the scary thing that I decided. And that imagery of turning to face the wall for me is a way of me just diffusing those thoughts that sometimes come, and it works for me.
It's powerful, isn't it? That bit of when we face in and lean into the things that scare us, that they can suddenly not be
quite. Yeah, and more often than not, the fears you create in your own mind are always bigger than the real fears around you.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of going back, speaking to your younger self, you know, be kind, you're enough as you are right now, and to look after yourself. So the looking after yourself would be advice you give to a young person. How do you bring that into your life right now? What's your self-care now?
Well, I think I continue with therapy. I think it's a great thing to do. I think it's a lifelong goal to understand yourself. So these days it's sort of digging, you know, in other places just to see how I can improve myself, improve my relationships with other people. But also just taking time for yourself. You know, I've got three amazing young children. I invest a lot of my time with them, and that gives me great joy. It's a way of me investing in myself to spend time with them. I will take breaks at the weekend. I have a place down on the South Coast, and I'll go down there sometimes just to R&R, breathe in the fresh air. I just bought a puppy, so that's another aspect of looking after myself, although how stressful that's going to be, I don't know yet. So, but looking forward to that. So I think, you know, acknowledging that time for yourself, investing in your headspace, and in fact, headspace is another one. You know, I do try and use headspace techniques, you know, mental techniques to actually meditate, detach. You know, that someone described it to me once as a very good analogy of day to day, you're in the traffic jam. And your thoughts are racing and you've got all these things. You're in, you know, a high-flying career, lots of things to navigate. Just sometimes during the day, you have to raise yourself above the traffic and just look down.
Yep.
Right? And then it's just a bit easier because you're not in the traffic. People aren't honking you. You're just looking at the traffic. And just 5-10 minutes of that a day also helps you detach and just chill.
Thank you. And dogs are coming up several times on this series of the podcast. So just... have you got a name for the dog yet?
We decided it. So I went down with my kids. It's a little sausage dog, a puppy. And that's been a bucket list thing for me for a long time. And we had a name picked, which two of my kids liked, one of my kids didn't. When we arrived, my youngest just said, he looks a little bit like Sonic the Hedgehog. So he's now Sonic the Sausage Dog. So hence we have a name.
Excellent. Good. And so talking about your children, if you were to imagine the world that you would love them to operate in when it comes to well-being, personal identities, mental health, what would that utopia look like?
Well, I think the utopia is just, for it's something for them not to be concerned about. Right? I think I already see in the millennial generation and below just a different level of acceptance about who you want to be. So whoever my kids want to be, in whatever form that takes, they've got me 100% behind them as they do their mum and others in their life. I think so that's what I would like, just to be themselves.
What a great way to end on the optimistic hope, and you know, certainly my experience as well, that the generations after us are better than we are at this stuff. And so if we can cheerlead and learn from them, then we're heading in the right direction.
100%, amen.
Thank you very much, Nat.
Thanks.
So that was Nat, and what an absolute pleasure to have the opportunity to have that conversation. So thank you to Nat, and also to Goldman Sachs for giving me their time to speak. The thing that I'm taking away from this episode is how feelings are not right or wrong, feelings just are, and that we have a choice about how we embrace them, how we work with them, how we understand them, and how we do that will impact on ourselves and our work, and really, really important, just that sense that feelings just are, and it's how we embrace them that matters. So, yeah, a really inspiring story that supports our real understanding around the campaign, the My Whole Self campaign. Remember to check out the campaign on our website. Details are in the description. Please do rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to join in the conversation with the hashtag JACPodcast. For now, I've been Simon Blake, and thanks for coping with us.